take a look at our website, rte.ie/Mooney.
You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Now, a campaign is underway to get legal protection for basking sharks in Irish waters. I always thought they were protected, but you learn something new every day. Anyway, to tell us more about it, we've got Simon Barrow of the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group. Hello, Simon. Thanks for talking to us. Whereabouts are you today?
Hello, Derek. I'm sitting on the shores of Pulbeg Marina here in Dublin City. I'm about to head out to Dublin Bay to do some work. But what we're really here to talk about is the proposal to the Dáil to give basking sharks legal protection in Irish waters. A proposal by Jennifer Whitmore TD in Wicklow to add basking sharks to the fifth schedule of the Wildlife Act, and this would give them legal protection in Irish waters. As many of your listeners will know, basking sharks are this awesome creature that we are home to in the spring and summer. Estimates are that we might be home to 10 to 20% of the global population of this threatened shark species. And there's huge cultural contacts with West Coast communities historically in Ireland. Basking sharks are protected in other states, including the UK, but they're not protected in Ireland. So this bill is to give them that legal protection. And as part of our campaign, there's a petition that we're asking people to sign just to give the government the true feeling of people's interest in sharks and why we should protect them.
Protected from what, though, Simon? We haven't hunted basking sharks off the west coast of Ireland since the 50s and early 60s, if I'm not mistaken.
Historically, there was a huge fishery for basking sharks, as you said. But basking sharks were actually still killed in European waters up to 2006. So they're still suffering from that heavy exploitation. But I suppose you're right. Modern threats to basking sharks are not fishing. They're more like habitat disturbance, habitat degradation. There is still a reasonable high level of ship collision. They are still bycaught accidentally in gill nets. But I do think, yes, I think the real measure would be to give us the legal framework to protect the habitat, to protect disturbance, to stop them being deliberately harassed. There is nothing to stop anybody going and driving over a shark in a rib or going and harassing them in a tour boat or a kayak. So we think that's not right. Because the important thing to remember, Derek, is that even though we see sharks feeding in Irish waters in the spring on seasonally abundant zooplankton, there's great evidence that these aggregations on the surface are not just for feeding, but they're for breeding and courting as well. So by getting too close and disturbing these sharks can have a profound impact on their reproduction. So look, no one's going to wave heavy legislation at somebody, but if you have the legal framework to back up a management, at a time when Irish coastal waters are under unprecedented pressure from wind farm developments, from marine spatial planning. So there's a huge legal framework that's coming through the Irish government. So this could be part of it. And I think also we owe it to sharks, to be honest, that we've hunted them for hundreds and hundreds of years and reduced their populations hugely. So while there could be some evidence the populations are increasing, they're still under pressure from different threats. So I think we owe it historically to give basking sharks the legal protection in Irish waters while we can.
Back in 1971, when Charlie Haughey was in power, Irish waters were designated a whale and dolphin sanctuary. And I'm just wondering, what difference did that make to cetaceans living in our coastal waters or migrating through our coastal waters? And what difference will your petition, if successful, make to basking sharks?
The designation of Irish waters a whale and dolphin sanctuary at the time was, I say, ridiculed both internally and externally, because there was no extra legislation that was empowered when Charles Haughey declared it. But there was two important things to that declaration. One is that he talked about protecting whales and dolphins in the European exclusive economic zones, out to 200 nautical miles, so beyond, if you like, the reaches of the Wildlife Act. So that was a very important state, that they recognised that even offshore, whales and dolphins should be protected legally. But also what it did is it raised awareness. A lot of people didn't realise that we had not just whales, but huge populations and huge diversity of whales in Irish waters. And I think this legislation for basking sharks can do the same thing. That people will be saying, what? We have sharks? The second biggest fish in the world, up to 12 metres in length, 3.5 tonnes. We have sharks in Irish waters. But not only that, we are globally important for these sharks, so we have a global responsibility to make sure we protect them. So I think the bill, if it goes through, will give that awareness And it will give them mechanism to provide funding for research and monitoring, to develop a code of conduct that we can roll out so people know how to approach sharks so as not to disturb them. So I think that kind of level of education awareness is critical, and I think the bill will really help that. So we do think that it will have a positive impact on the conservation status of bass sharks in Irish waters, and we urge not just the government to support it and to pass it, but for people to support it, because it's a shared responsibility, and we want to embrace that with our coastal communities, fishermen and everyone else who uses the sea.
So with a designation comes more funding, is that the case, and you can carry out more research?
Obviously, if they were designated as a protected species, it would help funding, but not just funding to understand more about them, but to funding to raise awareness and to make people more aware of the importance of Ireland for basking sharks. But there's interesting, you know, we're living in an unprecedented time of global change. And it's been said that basking sharks would make really good indicators of changes in our zooplankton population. And as you know, zooplankton is at the very foot of the food chain. So we already know zooplankton populations are responding to increasing water temperatures driven by climate change. So how these zooplankton distribution changes and associated fish and everything else associated with the zooplankton, it's very hard to monitor. But if you monitor the basking sharks that are inextricably linked to things like Callanus zooplankton, then you'll get some idea of these changes. And there's a really good project up in Northern Ireland called Sea Monitor. And last week, my colleague Emmett was out tagging basking sharks off Mayo, off Achill Island, ironically, the place of the best documented basking shark fishery in the world, where they killed up to 1,500 in a single year in the 50s. He was tagging them with transponders and satellite tags. And the idea is that if you start building up a marked population of basking sharks using these transponders that can last up to 5 to 10 years, we'll get a really good idea of how their distribution changes, we'll get some idea of numbers, we'll get some idea of how they're responding to changes in water temperature and zooplankton distribution. So I think could be a really important a species to add to a suite of monitoring protocols we roll out, as well as their just importance in Irish waters. So it's two-ended, really, Derek, you're right. I think it will help to get funding. It will make us do more towards monitoring their populations. It will raise awareness in our coastal communities. It will lead us to develop a code of conduct for people to follow when approaching basking sharks, because they're important for marine tourism. If you've ever seen a basking shark in Irish waters, you will never forget it. They are the most incredible species to experience. And I swear, you see them once, that memory will stay with you the rest of your life.
Well, Simon, thank you very much indeed. We'll let you go about the business of the day. Be careful on those rocks down there, won't you? And good luck with the petition.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks for your interest. And please support the petition, which is online on baskingshark.ie for all your information on basking sharks in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. And we'll put those details also on our website, which is rte.ie/Mooney. I've never actually seen a basking shark in the wild. Obviously, we feature them on Back from the Brink and Nature Live, those programmes you did with the European Broadcasting Union. Have you ever seen one in the wild, Niall, yourself?
I have. I remember seeing one off Loophead, and it was phenomenal. This huge, very slow-moving fish just going offshore. I could see the fin coming out of the water. Proper shark fin. Absolutely massive. Magical.
When you say fish, people don't believe you that sharks are fish. They don't think of sharks as being fish. I don't know what they think of them being. Man-eaters, perhaps, is what their impression is from watching movies like Jaws, etc., etc. But we've come along way, thank God. Now, Simon said the second largest fish in the sea, the biggest fish in the sea, the whale shark.
The whale shark, yes, an absolutely massive fish. I think the biggest specimen ever was almost 19 metres long, weighing 19 tonnes. They live more in tropical waters. They need to be sort of in middle latitudes. They wouldn't really be comfortable in Irish water. I think they need a sea temperature of 21 degrees centigrade, but absolutely massive fish. And like the basking shark, plankton feeders, so there's no threat to people there whatsoever.
And a huge tourist attraction, and a lot of debate about whether or not you should get into the water and swim with these creatures. Perhaps not, I think. At least with the basking sharks, people maybe are going down on boats to have a look, or looking from the headland and having a look out to see them. They come very close to the shore, I know that. So anyway, thank you very much indeed, Simon. And details about the petition can be found, petition, Gumaleshgale, on our website, rte.ie/Mooney. Do petitions work, Niall? Have you ever been involved in them? Birdwatch Ireland, I'm sure, must have been over the years.
Oh, absolutely. They can be a very effective tool, and there's many different types. I think probably the most interesting one I was involved with, and one of the most pressing, was actually at the behest of our BirdLife International partners in France, called the LPO. And they did a petition around saving the ortolan bunting.
Oh, yeah.
This is the, well, we've spoken about it on the program before, but it's the little songbird, the small, like it's almost sparrow-like creature. And what they do is that they would catch these in big numbers. This horrible situation where they trap them, they blind them, and then they force feed them. When they're blind, apparently, when they've lost their eyes, they gorge themselves, they fatten them up, drown them in Armagnac, I think it is, and then they would eat them whole with a handkerchief tied over their eyes so that God couldn't see their shame. Really, really cruel, but also a species that's really under threat. So our colleagues in France asked if we would help with this petition. They asked people all over Europe, and that international pressure was really important because countries do care what their international reputation is like. Obviously,
some do.
Some do, that's true. And obviously, politicians often care about what their own voters think about too. So I think a combination of the two works very well. But this got a lot of attention in France, that people in Ireland and in Britain and in Germany and in Spain were appalled by this horrible practice. And the thing is, it is illegal. It was illegal at the time as well, but there wasn't proper enforcement of those laws. So it takes time for things to change, but hopefully the tide is turning. Also been involved in petitions for places like Cyprus and Malta in terms of the illegal trapping of songbirds that happens there too. So this is a big problem. And here in Ireland, petitions over the curlew, also consultations for the European Union. That's very important as well. A lot of us don't seem to realise that we as European citizens have a right to have a say in what happens. So I think petitions can be a very valuable tool.
Okay, Richard and Aina are back with us now. Richard's in Malahide, Aina is in County Clare. Aina, have a listen to this WhatsApp which has come into us from Merrow Ward along the banks of the Royal Canal.
Hi Derek, I'm contacting you about herons on the Royal Canal near Crosscons Bridge in Phibsborough. A couple of days ago, while I was walking by the canal in the early evening, I was really surprised to see the usually shy blue heron approaching people and accepting food from them. I'm sure it's not a great idea for people to be feeding them. The herons usually appear to be quite happy foraging for themselves at the edge of the water. And hopefully, when people have gone back to their pubs or their restaurants, and when things return to relative normality for the rest of us, the herons can go back to feeding in their natural habitat without help from humans.
Thank you very much. Oh, sorry, Merrow. I'm jumping in on top of you. Thank you very much indeed, Merrow. You can send your WhatsApp to 087-708-7031. If we don't use it this week, we can have a listen and maybe get to it next week. Aina, any comments on that?
Yeah, I think this is just mad. I mean, we were talking last week about feeding gulls and that gulls learn the behaviour of attacking people for food because we have fed them. Now, a gull is one thing, but Lord, if you've seen a heron and the beak on a heron, the heron has a really long, sharp beak. So feeding herons is mad. And this heron obviously approaches people because people have been given food to them. People think it's great. Sure, it's only a jumped up duck. People feed ducks too. We should not feed wild birds. Like that in the wild, okay, you feed your garden birds in winter, that's a different story. But I mean, this heron is a carnivore. He spends his time on the riverbank catching fish, catching eels, catching frogs, whatever he can catch.
Yeah, they eat ducklings as well.
Feeding them? Oh, they'll eat ducklings too, they will indeed, and anything they can get their beaks around. So what are people feeding them? Are they giving them sandwiches? So, I mean, unless you're throwing baby eels or fish, I mean, if you go up to the zoo, the man in the zoo who feeds the sea lions, the herons all arrive on the roof because the Phoenix Park ones have, they know they can set their watches to 3 o'clock and they can know when the feeding is going to happen. And on the days when they don't feed the sea lions, the poor old herons can't read the sign and they're there waiting anyway, and the keeper will throw them the odd fish which they catch in the air. But feeding herons along the canal is a recipe for disaster because they're going to end. I mean, they're not stupid. If they think people are going to feed them, they're going to approach people. If people aren't feeding them quick enough, well, what'll they do next? So my advice is do not do it. Do not feed herons on the canal. It's madness.
Richard Collins.
Derek, I would be very careful with herons. Remember, the bird is in a bit of a dither. You know that word, dither.
Mm-hmm.
It's torn between two forces. I used to see this with swans, a swan that I'm trying to lure close to me. They are frightened at one stage. One side of them is saying, get out of here fast before you get into trouble. And the other side is saying, that's a nice juicy bit of food, I'd like it. So they're torn between those two things, and the result is often a kind of aggression. They get very aggressive when in that uncertain state of mind. And a heron would be quite like that. Swans certainly are. They hiss at you aggressively, and then they take a piece of bread from you the next second. So in that situation, anything can happen. Remember, it's a very unnatural predicament.
So don't feed them. Stay well clear is the advice from both Aina and Richard. And no better people to give you advice.
Send your wildlife recordings, questions and observations on WhatsApp to 087 708 7031.